Welcome to Radio Gorgeous. Today on the red sofa, we have Stephanie Kalman with her book, Confessions of a Bad Mother, The Teenage Years. If you've lived under a rock and don't know who Stephanie Kalman is, she's the founder of Bad Mothers Club website, author of 6 previous books. She created Channel 4's sitcom, Dressing for Breakfast. She's been on Have I Got a News for You, The Right Stuff. She's like a rash all over British newspapers and magazines, and the radio. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Stephanie.
Great to be here.
In your room.
Yes.
A little bit like Monsters, Inc. Speaking of monsters.
That's really good.
Do tell me, Bad Mother's website. Tell me how that all started.
Okay. I should make clear that I basically shut it down a few years ago. So for anybody who wants to find it, they won't find it, but I kept some great material I one day hope to sort of republish. Or what really happened there was, weirdly simple in a way, I wanted to publish a magazine. I had this insane fantasy that I was Felix Dennis and very rich, and I would start this magazine for other people like me and my husband Peter, who weren't parenting perfectly, and there was definitely a kind of pall of guilt that was hanging over us like a cloud of smog, fueled by, yes, the media a bit, but also the rise of the celebrity mother. I feel so fulfilled. You'd see these interviews, I feel fulfilled, I feel marvellous all the time. And I was thinking, well, that just sounds very odd, because most people I know don't feel fulfilled and marvellous. They feel tired. They feel often that it's very boring looking after small children, which people often don't say. They're not having sex. They feel their body is disgusting. And quite often their relationship may be suffering. They may even be depressed and tired. And then what happened was, my husband was very good at reducing the labour on both of us. We were absolutely a team. And every now and then he'd say, okay, look, do we need to do this? This doesn't seem necessary. Let's not do this. And it would be some little piece of, you know, kit that we didn't need or some procedure. Actually, warming bottles was one of the first. We didn't warn them because we couldn't be bothered or we were tired and nobody noticed. So that's another thing we just don't need to do. We didn't sterilise, we had a dishwasher, and we, you know, got good information, good science information, and just didn't do that. So that was good. So one day I had this kind of epiphany. I was in the school playground and there was a woman there, very glamorous, black woman actually, and the only black mother I'd seen at the children's rather posh school, if I'm honest, beautifully dressed, really dynamic, and she had this circle of people around her by the gate, and she was saying, oh, people say to me, Jay, how do you do it? And apparently she'd done mental health work or charity work, and she was a lawyer, and she had to get blah 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 kids. I'd never seen her before. How do you do it? And I say to them, well, you know, I put the kids to bed in their uniform and I give them chocolate for breakfast in the car on the way to school. And there was this sort of flutter of ah ha ha and oh my god that sort of echoed around the playground. And I went home and said to Peter, I have a feeling we're not the only people who are doing this sort of thing. Even though I knew what she said was satire, but satire was really what I wanted. I loved The Onion, and what I wanted to publish was like Onion for Parents kind of thing. And also carers and all the people who, I had an amazing nanny, and my kids had a child minor. And I thought, these are the people I also want to reach who are doing a lot of the job and no one ever talks about them, especially those celebrities. They never mention them. So he said, oh, well, starting a magazine's a lot of money. I said, well, yeah, I have a magazine background. So we just kind of went, okay, that's not going to work. And then he said, he was working at Channel 4, and he said, well, the people who built the Channel 4 motoring website are quite friendly. Do you want to go and talk to them? It was called 4Car. And 4Car was very successful. So I said, well, I'll give them a call. Anyway, I beat them down from quite a lot of money to a manageable sum. I'm not a negotiator, so I don't know how that happened. And they said, sure, 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 we can build it for you. And this was in 2002. And what you do is this, and you do this. And I said, here are my ideas. It was one piece of A4. And they said, oh, you need a forum. And I said, what's a forum? I think Mumsnet had already started, but I'd never seen it. And they said, oh, you're just the thing people go on. They talk to each other. Don't worry about it. You just need one. We'll just stick it over there and you get on with your satire. So I was writing these so-called news stories, one of which I remember was mothers breathe too much of their baby's air, say researchers. So there's a lot of stuff about, and also some quite, you know, anti kind of our education system stuff. So like F for fail will be abolished, everyone will get L for lovely. And sure enough, they did abolish F for fail after a while, which is probably a good thing. But the satire sometimes comes true, as you know, if you make something up and then it happens, you think, oh my God, and it happens. So I just started off in a small way. And then I wrote a little itty bitty press release. And I sent it round to a few papers, and the Daily Mail were on the phone straight away and gave me 3 pages. And then I got a call from This Morning, otherwise known as Fern and Philip, and Denise, the agony aunt, and they hated it. So we had this awful disaster on TV. And it was, I was quite shaken afterwards by how unpleasant they were. Anyway, here's the weird thing. I got home and my inbox was full of messages. And they all said, literally all of them said, well done, or you've spoken, you've said something about how I feel, you know, being tired, getting it wrong. Maybe we're not wrong, or something like that. Anyway, and a couple of them also said, which was another bee in my bonnet, we know that those people you were talking to on TV aren't at home being perfect, because there they are in the studio, obviously, obvs, not being at home being all marvellous. And indeed, one of those presenters admitted that they had slapped one of their kids for throwing up on their, on the parents' bed. And in the ad break, the minute that we were off air, I got this confession. And every now and then I tell people in this kind of, well, actually, you know, and you can, you know, you can probably almost work out who it was. I thought it was really revealing that there we were being given a hard time by, you know, 3 professionals, one of whom said, well, actually.
But I think that guilt cycle started for me before I even gave birth. In America, anyway, at the time, there was very prevalent that what to expect.
Oh,
it was basically what to fear and loathe,
yeah,
and what you're going to be doing wrong, yeah, and what you're doing wrong already.
Yeah.
And it was just,
I'm glad you mentioned,
horrible.
That one.
And also, I gave birth wrong.
Mm.
I mean,
me
I
too.
You know, because I had a emergency C-section. I, you know, everything.
Oh, mine was worse, because mine was elective. And I had my reasons, which I don't talk about in public, which some people listening will probably work out, because it's not that hard to work out what those might be. But that was interesting. And I wrote about that in The Guardian and got a fair amount of flack. I mean, less than I expected. And my husband kept saying, how does it matter how the baby gets here? God, what's wrong with people? And women attack other women. And that's the thing I don't get. On Bad Mothers Club, they were generally supportive to each other. I'm very proud of what those people did, those people who were on there saying to each other, hey, are you okay? And they were meeting up. And at one point, there was a poor woman who had some kind of breakdown and she was in a really bad way. And they started talking to each other and they sort of rallied round. And I thought, wow, imagine if the government did that, you know, and sent out buddies. And they could just sit with you for a while. You know, you don't have to be hospitalised. Also, the system hasn't got the resources. The book, Confessions of a Bad Mother, grew out of, to be really honest with you, my brother-in-law's a publisher. And he said, oh, I think this could be a book. And I was like, well, I don't think so. I mean, anyway, eventually, not with my brother-in-law, because that was a bit too intimate, it became this book. And it sold well. And I think it struck a chord. And I think there was a big element of timing. It was the moment where people wanted to say, yes, okay, this isn't being a bad mother. Some people reviewed it, didn't get the joke. But generally, people were, you know, they felt I'd said something that kind of wanted to be said. And I think timing was a huge factor. And we did the same with the sitcom. I had this great producer, Jane Wellesley, who's marvellous. And she's quite serious, Jane. So she'd say, okay, seriously, we need things to go wrong. We didn't go for funny. We just never went funny. We went for, what can we throw at her this week? Okay, her mother's got a boyfriend, she hasn't. And remember, this is 1992, 93. So again, this hadn't quite been said in this way. It was quite feisty. We had a lot of press, a lot.
Sort of a Fleabag now. Yeah.
In a way, I mean, it wasn't as dark and weird, and we didn't do single camera. I wanted single camera. I didn't really want the audience thing. Channel 4 said, we love everything so far, but this is non-negotiable. You have to have an audience. So it kind of changes it.
Yeah.
You know, they say people laugh more if there's an audience. I'm like, oh, all right. And I thought, you again, got to compromise. I got the show on, you know, first timer. Amazing.
Yeah.
Channel 4 was a great place then. They would just say, oh, I will come in and have a chat. All right, then. I mean, they really did do that. It wouldn't happen now. But I think it said stuff about how, really, you know, you might want a relationship, but not at any cost. It was not Bridget Jones. The commissioning editor was a man, and he got it. He said, the value at stake is independence, which is a thing you get, value at stake, in those writing courses. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well, yes, thank you. Yes, it's about independence, really, and being your own person while also wanting to get laid now and then and having a mother who has a much better sex life than you do, which now seems very tame. But then it was, yeah, you know, we got front pages and all that kind of stuff.
Talking about than this book. So now we're at the teenage years.
Yeah, I mean, there's been books in between. Yes. That's the, I wasn't going to be writing a sequel. The sequel was Confessions of a Failed Grown-Up, which kind of didn't make an impact. I mean, it's my favourite one, but now, yeah, my publisher actually said, we should do this.
When you're writing about... Because I started writing a blog. It's called Drunk Mommy. So it was in the same vein.
Yeah.
When they're little, before they're... in the world consciousness and conscious of the world, writing about them, your children, is different.
Yeah.
And obviously writing about your husband, who you've not killed.
I've not killed. He has read every single word, though.
Yes. But and that's different as well. You know, consenting or non-consenting, but, you know. But
yeah, no, but I wouldn't write anything that would make him feel, you know, stupid or embarrassed.
Exactly. So you reserve that for yourself.
I do. That's how it works. You're absolutely right, yeah.
But tell me about that negotiation, either with yourself or with them, because they seem like incredibly generous kids. That despite your best efforts, they turned out all right.
It's the strangest thing, because they're not... It's weird. They're not like me. I sometimes see bits of my parents in them. My parents were quite neurotic and weird, but I see some good things from my parents, which is a very strange sensation and quite a nice thing. I also managed to marry somebody, having had, I should say, a lot of therapy, and I don't want to hide that because I think it's important. Mm. Without that, I would never have married Peter. I don't know, be dead or mad or something or drunk all the time. So I married the person who is, you know, much... less crazy than I am. And that is the way forward. I think if you're, you know, if you're this kind of person, you're quite, you have some, had some big problems in the past and you get anxiety or you get depression or any of those things. My dad used to say, oh, it's basically try and sleep with someone who has, never sleep with anyone who has had more problems, has more problems than you do. And he found it on a matchbook in New York or something with a great, you know, several pieces of life advice. And my father always managed to break that rule and have terrible, crazy relationships. So he didn't know anything. But somewhere this sort of a grain of sense was brewing. I just about got myself sorted enough, I think, to not completely wreck the relationship with Peter. I nearly did. So I think the other thing, if anybody's curious, why are Lawrence and Lydia, I haven't answered your question yet, why are they the lovely people that they are? A, Peter. B, me a bit. And actually giving them quite a lot of, I think, sort of mental freedom when they were little. So, you know, lots of fun TV and videos and, you know, freedom to kind of just think and draw. Didn't overregulate their spare time, which is, I don't know about America, but this is like a disease here. Maybe, I don't know if that's a factor. Very nice people helping look after them. Joan, the childminder, very nice, very calm, opposite of me, very quiet. Just gonna do the nappies, Steph, and then you can take them back. And so there was Joan, and then the major person was Katerina, to whom the book is dedicated, who is not always perfectly calm, but she's super intelligent, and she did a lot of the early years. She did the kind of toilet training, not strict toilet training, but she just helped me get through that stage while Peter was at work and all that. And she taught them to count, and she was constantly kind of showing them stuff and developing their observational acuity and their motor skills, but she didn't do it as a kind of lesson. She would just say, hey, look at that. And she was absolutely brilliant, and we're still, we see each other. She lives nearby, and Lydia pops over to see her, and, you know, she's in the book. And I think that's really important. I feel people don't talk about this enough. Apart from Jacob Rees-Mogg and his nanny, in this country, people just don't acknowledge this, like, super army of invisible people, almost all women, not entirely, who helped to raise our kids. And for me, that was the way forward. I wasn't going to be, I did badly on my own at home day after day. And it doesn't matter how lovely your kids are. And I needed to be back writing, and I needed to be outside in touch with the world and all of that. So everybody's different. So it's no good saying people who send their kids to a childminder are, you know, evil and wrong. They're not. They're just not you. How did I negotiate with Lawrence and Lydia? Right. Yeah. So I showed them stuff. I said, they've asked me to do a book about teenagers. I kind of need the money and I kind of want to do it. And I think it's interesting. You will have to read it, because it's going to be quite a lot about you. But one thing I did do is, because my children were quite nice and weren't really horrible as teenagers, generally, I thought, I had been accused in one review of the original Bad Mother book of, you know, not being bad enough from someone who didn't get the joke in a serious newspaper. she's not bad, she hasn't thrown her children against the wall, and this whole thing is a sham. So I thought, well, actually, who was really bad as a teenager? Oh, look, me. I was awful. I was very unhappy. I was flailing around. I didn't like school. I didn't know what I was. I was just all over the place. I really wanted to start my career, but that hadn't happened yet. So I wrote about my life in my family, which was quite crazy. Not to just kind of go, oh, then I've ticked the box. There's a bad teenager in the book and, you know, you won't ask for your money back because you've been misrepresented. It wasn't for that reason. It was a contrast to also send a message to parents, which is those parents who go, you know, how are you? Well, I mean, you know, Jemima hasn't got an A+ for philosophy and we just don't know what we're going to do. So it's to those people to say, you think that's where, okay, this is what our life was like in the 70s, excuse me, when I was miserable and my father and stepmother were fighting. That's not the worst story you've ever heard, but get a life now, really? So I don't say that, but that's kind of what the message slightly is. You know, sometimes people are in a mess and there is an actual problem. Not getting A+ with philosophy isn't that.
I think you bring up an interesting point there, because in my mothering, I mean, I had quite crazy growing up and was quite a few struggles, which I overcame until I became a parent.
Of course.
Because you're right back in that situation.
And
that was really clear in the book that they hadn't had the same experience. Your children have not had the same experience growing up as you have. And you're the person sort of being healed and guided through this process. And one of the things that comes is there still some shame around the fact that you didn't go to university? Because you do...
Me, no. Actually, I don't care. I don't care. I think now we do have a problem because everybody's being funneled to university, including people a bit
it's
like
not appropriate.
Me
yeah.
or like some people I know who you think, well, like my friend who was a nurse who now can't go back to nursing, who's super bright because he hadn't got a degree. So that's kind of silly. So with Lawrence and Lydia, I said, okay, you'll have to read it. And anything you don't like. And Lawrence had one objection, which was a couple of times... He had called me mother in an ironic way. And he said, you've got it in there like 6 times. Can you just stop saying I call you mother all the time? In his pretend polite, you know, middle-class boy voice. So I went, oh, okay, I took out 2 and left in 2 or something. And his nickname for me is Mothership, which I like. He just said it one day. We were both P-Funk, George Clinton, Funkadelic fans. And it kind of came from that. But also for me, the Mothership circles the planet. And every now and then, as the people on the planet grow up and grow their own food and do their own thing, the mothership reduces, it makes its orbit slightly further away. I don't know. And so I thought the mothership was a good image. And I have a little drawing I sometimes send the kids, which is a little frying pan in space, which is the mothership. So it's shaped like a saucepan or a frying pan. And it's little stars and moons. But I haven't kind of, you know, made it official yet. So I'm still trying. And as I said to you, we are in a strange time because Lawrence has come back from Manchester University after 4 years, which he loved. And he cooks very well. And he's now more of a grown-up because he's been dealing with his own finances and bills and sharing houses with people who are, you know, better or worse or harder or easier. And that is actually quite tough because there are times when I think, he has some skills that maybe... I don't have, which is embarrassing. And we sometimes argue and I feel I failed. And last night I went into one of those I failed utterly modes. And I just went upstairs and sat on the bed and thought, oh, I should just, like, I'm the teenager. I was the one who got it
wrong. Sulking.
Yeah, I was sulking and I was saying, but you don't understand me, it is not my fault.
But that is where you are. You know what I mean? Like, we do get stuck in those same responses, in those teenage responses, but it's recovery time. That's what I'm thinking. It's like, if I shorten the cycle, I'm still going to go through it. But if I shorten the cycle right here, right now, Stephanie Calvin, it's fine.
It is such a deep, I mean, I think it's important to say this. That's how I'm feeling today. But, you know, maybe there are people out there. And Peter did say to me one day, it's possible there are people out there who think that, you know, we know stuff. And that you know how to do it. And every now and then, you know, somebody will write, you know, say, can you send us a piece of like 5 tips to be... And I think, oh, well, no, because I don't know.
But also, and this comes out in the book a lot, You're so proud of them.
Yeah, I am.
You're just like, oh my God, all right, look, you sort of almost have the same sense of achievement as they do, perhaps even more so. You're like, oh my God, look, they did it.
I guess, yeah, because I also think what I wanted to convey in the moment, which thank God I'd kept some notes, otherwise there'd be no book anyway, is that moment where you have this incredible highs and lows, which we all know, but I think sometimes, you know, when you're in a low, you sort of forget there was a, you know what I mean, there was a high, so yeah. So I think there's that feeling of absolute elation. Also, you can't believe it, because when they're small and they do something, you know, quite, I don't know, clever or reasonable or careful or caring, or they carry a glass full of water to the table, you just think, well, wow. Because so far, you know, you're not looking back on that with hindsight from this position of them being at bloody university and paying their own rent and all the rest of it. They, you've only known them as a baby, which is very, oh, well, I can't imagine them walking. And then they walk in, well, I can't imagine them talking. And then, as my father would have probably said, then you can't imagine them answering back and being really kind of, what do you know? My children are now, and they're just 20 and 20, he'll be 22 next week, is that you don't know anything about anything. And I think that is very hard, because some of what you think might be outdated, some of it really isn't, but they've got to do that. They've got to say, as Lawrence did when we were discussing Tinder, which my children are not on, by the way, but we were talking about it because I've been reading about it. And I said, oh, this is ridiculous. You know, you pick out somebody from a picture on a phone. And Lawrence was like, well, you know, I said relationships are the same. But he's like, you know, you don't know anything. It's all different now. So I think that's quite hard when you just have a little neutral discussion that then gets a bit heated because, you know, you don't know anything. Well, you're just, you know, what do you know? And that is quite hard. And I used to have furious
rows. It's wearing. Rows with it's my wearing.
Parents. Yes. Yeah, it's and I wearing. Think I should learn to say, okay, no, that's a fair point, and then just shut up. Because it doesn't help for me to go on and on about, yes, but, you know, blah, blah. I mean, God knows.
Always needing the last word.
Yeah, and I am not like that.
Necessarily awful. The best.
By the way, thing. The greatest TV programme on at the moment, for anybody who hasn't seen it, especially if you're remarried or any of that, or your parents, it's called Bonus Family on Netflix. And the reason I want to mention it is the most uptight cat, Bonus Family is step family in Sweden, the most uptight of the adults in this fantastic, bit like Modern Family, but a slightly more serious and kind of emotionally, there are therapists in there. You'd love it. Anyway, this woman, the uptight woman, who's a bit kind of little bit obsessional and controlling, she leans out of the cab and in a real concession calls after her departing son, who's about 14. I know I always think I'm right. And he's just gone and doesn't quite hear. And I thought, oh, yeah, I do know I always think I'm right. Mm. And then I feel like I've got to lean out of a car door, and say it just as people have kind of reached the end of the street, turned the corner, and they can't hear me anyway. But for her, that's a huge deal. So the grown-ups in it are trying to evolve. Yeah. And it's fascinating.
Anyway, we're all trying to evolve.
Well, yes.
Wish us luck. Thank you so much, Stephanie.
Well, thank you.
And let's may we all
evolve.
Evolve. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
It might happen. Thank you so much. And for more fabulous women, please go to www.radiogorgeous.com.